Welcome to A State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with business leaders to discuss what it takes for a company to be in a state of readiness and become a high performance organization with your host, Joseph Paris. Welcome everyone to another episode of State of Readiness with your host, Joseph F. Paris. With me today, I have Dr. Cynthia Young. Dr. Young resides in Chesapeake, Virginia, and holds several accredited degrees, Bachelor of Arts in English, Language and Literature from the University of Maryland, College Park, two Masters of Business Administration, one in e-commerce and one in Advanced Management Studies from Trident University International, and a Doctorate of Business Administration from Walden University. Cindy's a Theater Mission Planning Center curriculum developer and instructor with Leidos, and we'll talk about what that means in a little bit, a defense contracting company. She's also a retired surface warfare officer with 23 years in the U.S. Navy. She's a past chair of American Society for Quality, Tidewater, Section 1128, and a member of the Project Management Institute, Golden Key International Honor Society, and Delta Mount Delta International Business Honor Society. She also raises money for leukemia in her spare time and lymphoma society with team and training. She's run two marathons, a Marine Corps marathon and a Chicago marathon, and two half marathons, Norfolk Harbor half marathon and the Las Vegas Rock and Roll half marathon to date. Welcome, Cindy. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. You know, I know you got up quite early to participate in this podcast, so I want to thank you for that. I know that it's not too often too easy, but you also have had your cup of coffee, correct?
I did.
Good. So one thing that I had a question of, because, you know, setting this up, was that you have a satellite internet connection at home?
I do. I have a satellite connection, and it's not very reliable, so I came into work to do this.
Yeah, well, that's super. I really appreciate the extra effort. Now, you and I just recently met. We've known of each other. We've been in each other's circles for quite some time, but we just recently met at a PEX conference in Orlando, and that's the first time we've met, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. So you have, you know, quite an astonishing career, I've got to say, which is, you know, of course, the reason I've invited you to the podcast. You're accomplished academically. You had 23 years in the Navy. When you joined the Navy, did you join right out of high school? Did you go to university first?
No, I didn't actually have the grades to get into college. I didn't have the money. So I decided to join the military and start a career. And about a couple of years into it, that's when I decided to start going to school, because the Navy offered GI Bill and a lot of opportunities for tuition assistance. So I did that, and about the time I was 27, I had my bachelor's degree, and then I earned my commission, and from there I just kept going to school.
That's awesome. That's an awesome story. That really is. So you went right into the Navy as basically an enlisted person.
Yes.
And what was your first assignment?
I was stationed in Imperial Beach, California, which is a little city inside of San Diego. And it was pretty good. It was 3 years there. And I didn't even have my driver's license when I joined the Navy.
So what was your MOS?
I was a cryptologic technician maintenance, so I did electronic repair on communications equipment and ancillary support equipment, and just basically work systems by the beach, so it was pretty good.
Yeah, so you didn't have the grades to go into university right out of high school, but you've more than made up for that. What was the trigger? What made you say, I want to go back to school? And obviously you've excelled.
Oh, I think I just didn't want to fail. You know, I wanted to be able to set myself up. I originally came in with the idea of only doing 6 years of enlistment in the military. And then from there, my ex-husband and I at the time, we had a daughter, and, you know, so I wanted to do something good for her which was get her set up with steady, you know, steady income. And I was looking at getting out of the Navy. And when I started going to school, I decided I was going to stay in longer. And I enjoyed going to school because it wasn't like I had to go. It was my choice. And as I began to learn more things about what I could find out about the world, it was just seemed natural to stay in. So I did that, and around the time of my, I think I was 46 when I got my doctorate. So it was a long time.
Because you had to balance, you know, your academic career as well as your commitment to the Navy.
Right. But I got my doctorate when I became a contractor.
Okay, so you're on the outside. You got your MBA and your undergrad during the Navy, and your doctorate outside or after the Navy.
Correct.
How was it balancing, work, Navy, academic career, and family life, especially with a young daughter? How did you manage that?
It was not easy. The main thing I did was I continued to get duty stations, whether it was ship or shore duty, out of Norfolk. I moved to Norfolk when my daughter was in kindergarten, and that was the best way I could do to keep her stable. And then I was able to go to school. I did a lot of online courses. I went, of course, I got a bachelor's at a land institution, so I went to University of Maryland. But the hard part was finding time to actually type up my work. When I first started, I didn't ever use a computer. I used a word processor. And so my typing skills really tested. So I just had to figure it out, make time, duty days. When I was on the ship working on master's degrees, I would just do it on my duty days, get all my drills done, run the duty section, and then do my work.
Were there ever, moments where you said, yeah, forget this, I gotta set this aside for a while? Or did you, somehow summon up the inner intestinal fortitude to carry on?
Well, no, there was actually a time when I did drop out of a program. I was on one of my department head rides when I was weapons officer, and I was working on a PhD. Because I have a doctorate, but it's a doctorate of business administration. It's a working doctorate rather than an academic, where I go to a college and teach. This is really about working in the world and solving real world business problems. So what I did is I was working on my doctorate on the PhD one, and my chair emailed me on deployment when I was sitting off the Horn of Africa and said, sorry, we can't talk enough. I have to drop you. And so he passed me off to another chair, and I just got very frustrated with it. And so I quit, and I thought, oh, I don't need a doctorate. And over the years that passed, that was about 2008, I really wanted to go back and get it. Well, then I discovered a DBA, and once I retired, I discovered it. And then I decided I'm going to go for that. And 3 years later, I had earned my doctorate.
That's awesome. And it took you 3 years to earn your doctorate, but you're out of the Navy by that time.
Right. I've been on Navy about 4 years.
Yeah. Okay. Super. So how was the transition from Navy to civilian life?
Well, transition hasn't really been that difficult because I became a defense contractor. Okay. So I didn't really take a full clean cut away from the Navy. I'm back supporting the Navy in my job.
Okay. So without disclosing anything that would be considered, secret or whatnot, I'm having a challenge with this title here, a Theater Mission Planning Center Curriculum Developer and Instructor.
Yeah.
What is that?
I create curriculum and I do instruction for some of the students. We, where I work, we do a lot of stuff with the Tomahawk land attack missile. And so my job is to build a curriculum to teach a person becoming a mission planner to plan mission start to finish. So I build a lot of curriculum for that, deliver it to the government, and the government actually teaches it in their spaces. But I'm also going to be responsible for teaching the UK students. And so I'm hoping to get over to the UK sometime in the next year. It just really depends on their rotation of personnel.
Yeah. So in the curriculum, is this sort of like a for simulations or training on how to use the systems or engage the systems?
No, it's how to use a planning system. Well, it went from being a Unix base, a big bay, to now it's on a laptop. It's really easy. It's changed a lot. I was a planner about 20 years ago. I planned, and it's a lot different. Technology has really come a long way.
So, you know, in addition to all your other degrees, you're also a PMP.
Yes.
Right? Project Management Professional.
Correct.
And a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt, not just a black belt, and an ASQ Certified Manager of Quality and Organizational Excellence. So, you know, you're quite a busy individual. You know, what keeps you moving forward to learning and gaining all these levels of expertise? I mean, they're all interconnected, right? I mean,
yes,
there's a thread
exactly.
Between project management and, you know, so it's not like you're going from bass fishing to mountaineering. This is, you know, like, you know, all within connected dots. But, you know, why don't you know, walk me and the audience through that part of your journey?
Okay. Well, I first learned about ASQ back in 2010 when I discovered that Department of Defense had an instruction about belts, about black belts and green belts, and about how many people had to be certified and who the stakeholders were. And I'm like, oh, what is this? And so I found out we had an ASQ section in Tidewater area, and I went to a meeting, and then I said, well, I want to do this. This sounds really cool. So I did a Kaizen event at my command. Well, I got, you know, it didn't, it, like most first tries, it just didn't do well. I had a new XO, a new executive officer, his second in command. He came aboard right as we were finishing up our planning, and then we go into execution of it, and he tanked it. He didn't know what we were doing. He didn't ask us. And so when I did the debrief of, you know, lessons learned, he asked me, well, who did this? And so I had to tell him. But luckily, I knew him from a previous command. So it made things a lot easier to tell him. But that's when I decided I wanted to work on, you know, green belt, black belt, and master black belt. And so I did that. And I went to speak at ASQ. And I spoke at their Lean Six Sigma World Conference in 2011. And I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed meeting people. I met people like Karen Martin. And so she was very, very, I wouldn't say influential. I just think, you know, say she was a really nice person to meet the first time because I was in an elevator and scared, and she looked at me and she, I'm in my uniform. I'm just a, you know, a lieutenant commander in my uniform and looking scared as hell. And she comes up and says, this is a great conference, isn't it? I'm like, yes, ma'am. And I had no idea who she was, but now we talk on LinkedIn and she's great. And I think that, you know, one day we'll actually meet in person. It's one of those LinkedIn relationships. But
weren't you in the elevator together?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you did actually meet.
Yeah. I met in person, but I mean, in passing 30 seconds.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah. You've never, you know, broke bread or had a cup of coffee together or something like that.
No. Okay. Nope, okay. Kind of like you and me.
Very. Yeah. Exactly.
So, you know, after that, I decided I like this, so I was going to work on that. So I did, you know, I did what I needed to do to get my certification. And then when I retired, my company needed more PMPs. So I said, well, what is that? And I realized I had all the background to do project management professional because I had managed projects all throughout my time as a naval officer and programs too. But project management professional is much easier to get than program management. There's no way I'd want to go for program manager professional certification. So I did that and I realized how intertwined they were. And then about 2017, I took my SEAM QOE exam, and that just really made sense to me because it was a lot of what I'd done with leadership management over the years, integrating the quality and the risk. And all those things about PMP and you know, ASQ that really makes sense. So, and this is kind of timely because last night I was at the ASQ meeting watching one of my friends, Scott Rutherford, do the red ball experiment. And, you know, you can never get enough of that. It's always interesting. And we had to introduce ourselves and talk about certifications. And I've always told people this, is that I really wish ASQ and PMI would get together sometime and have a little baby. You know, it should be, they should really be intertwined as far as certifications. Because quite honestly, it would save me a lot of money and time, you know, just to have the same path to follow. Because there is so much in common.
So, I mean, in addition to all of this that you have going on, you've also contributed to a couple of books, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And I have another chapter because these are doctoral anthologies for the Refractive Thinker series. And, and so this next chapter is coming out. The book is coming out, I think it's April 2nd. It'll be up on Amazon. But it's a project management book. So I'm writing about project management and how you incorporate lessons learned throughout the process, not just at the end, like so many organizations do.
So you're contributing a chapter. So you're collaborating with other authors who are contributing other chapters.
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? I mean, does everybody collaborate and talk about the overarching structure of the book, or is there, you know, El Comandante that says I need this and this and this?
Well, I wouldn't call her that, but yes, Dr. Cheryl, she's great. She has her own publishing company, and she writes a lot of books, and she also brings a lot of doctoral students together, or doctoral doctors, to get their work out. So we write these dissertations, and they don't go anywhere. So what we do is we try to integrate those into our chapters, and then also do further research. So these are scholarly articles we're citing. And it's also integrating our research. And so the first chapter I did was in a book, Women in Leadership. And so I talked about knowledge management as far as women in leadership went. But then I've carried knowledge management theme throughout all my chapters, because that's really what I like to write about, is knowledge management and how it affects lean, how it affects projects, how it affects organizations. I really think that people miss the mark on knowledge management sometimes, and so I try to help them by looking at what they do and giving ideas of how they can incorporate it without saying, oh, we gotta have a knowledge management policy.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, you know, knowledge management. You know, what exactly does that mean? You know, are you hoovering up a bunch of, you know, information and data and putting it in the catalog, or what does
Well, that can be a little bit of it, a lot of people have the misconception that knowledge management is finding a SharePoint portal, put stuff on, and then be able to go back to it, because it doesn't really do anybody any good if they don't know it's there. What I like to look at knowledge management as is a way of sharing and transferring the information so it's usable by everybody. I really do think that if people hold knowledge themselves, it's selfish. I think that people need to share information makes me more of a team player. It makes the organization a better team itself. You can support your shareholders better. You can support your stakeholders better, your customers better, and each other better.
So, I being around the block a couple of times myself, what I find is that, you know, oftentimes people will have this tendency to try to create that knowledge new every time instead of actually looking. You know,
yes.
That knowledge might exist. Even if you had this knowledge management system, even if it was there, people have this internal tendency to, like, if I can't find it immediately, if it's not, you know, like almost native knowledge, like I already knew it, I'm going to assume that it doesn't exist and I'm going to create it again.
Yes. And a lot of people will do that, and mistakenly so. They'll spend a lot of time doing that, and it's very impressive what people can come up with. But then if you look back in the history of the organization, you'll find out somebody's already done that. And it's just, it's not public. So, one of the things I recommend in my chapter is when you share information during a project, when you do your after action report, a lot of people do an after action and they'll brief the C-suite or they'll brief the senior leadership, but have other project teams in there with you, have other project managers required to attend these meetings. That way they're hearing the same things that you're telling the bosses. So it's not stovepipe to a certain project, because projects, they don't really change. The outcome may be different for each project or the task or scope, but the fact that you have to stay within a certain cost or a certain time, there are tricks to those to making that work. And if somebody does really well in one project, why wouldn't you want to help out somebody else in your company with that? There's always a fear that if somebody knows what I know, they'll get ahead, but that's not really how it works. If you don't share your information, people are not going to be successful, and that'll bring down your organization, eventually. It may not happen today,
Yeah,
but it'll happen.
I think that happens a lot less. I think people are becoming, inherently more and more collaborative and open. I mean, I'm thinking, here I am in my mid-50s, so I'm, thinking back to, corporate America where there wasn't an intranet or an internet, and, knowledge was power within an organization. But that's, I think, a lot less so than it is today, wouldn't you say?
Well, maybe some places, but where I've worked since I've retired, because I think I got a little bit spoiled being in the military, because you share information so easily. The only thing that keeps you from sharing something is the classification. But when you
Right.
retire and you transition to another job outside of, your daily grind, it's a different world. I've worked with project managers that didn't want to share lessons learned. I've worked with people who work in a PMO, and PMO didn't want to share the information because they didn't think it was relevant to me knowing it as a program manager. And we share the same sort reference or not references, same resources.
Yeah,
So it's important.
I'll just never understand. I'll never understand that, And I think we also have to train people to look into our internal knowledge management system, as well. Because I
Yes.
think there's two challenges. We have to train people to feed the system, and then we have to train people to use the system.
Yeah, and we also have to train people to know how to weed the system out, because there may be too much information there, or it might be passed over because it's just so much. However, you also have to make sure that if something's out of date, that maybe technology's gotten past the problems in the past, that you get rid of it.
So, we're going to take a break and be right back after this brief intermission. You've been listening to State of Readiness with Joseph Paris, and our guest today is Cindy Young. Be right back. This episode of State of Readiness, sponsored by the Operational Excellence Society, a think tank, a creator and aggregator of knowledge and know-how, serving businesses and professionals who wish to learn more on the various topics which combined comprise the discipline of operational excellence. Learn more at www.opexsociety.org. Welcome back, everyone. This is Joseph Paris, and you're listening to State of Readiness. My guest today is Cindy Young. You're still with us, right,
I
Cindy?
am.
All right, excellent. So, we covered a lot of your career and a lot of, obviously there's a passion you have in learning, and call it the epicenter would be knowledge. You like to or you enjoy or you have a passion for gaining knowledge, converting that knowledge, old knowledge, into new knowledge. But in addition to the sharing outlets of sharing, you and I met recently at a PEX conference in Orlando for the first time. You also enjoy speaking as part of
Yes.
a sharing mechanism. So, what are some of the topics that you speak about?
Well, I mean, as you noted, I do have a passion about knowledge management, so that's primarily what I speak about. I stay away from case studies because I don't want to put my company into it, the company that I'm supporting. So I talk about things that I find have bitten me in the butt in the past, or that I know people are challenged with in the future that they're working on. So I normally speak about operational excellence and knowledge management as a total package. So I've spoken about pre-plan responses. I'm getting ready to speak about, you know, saving cost and time in projects. I go to a lot of conferences. I enjoy speaking at conferences, and quite honestly, for those listeners out there, that's the best way to attend a conference, because if you're a speaker, you generally don't have to pay to attend. You just have to pay to get there.
Yeah.
So I like that. It gives me a good chance to interact with people like you, as well as other speakers, and get to know what really gets them going. So I know.
Some of the things that I get out of attending a conference is, I'll get an idea, and I'll convert that to some other use. So a person might be speaking on a specific topic applied in a specific environment under specific circumstances, and I'll take that notion and adapt it to something that is completely unrelated. I find it that, we get into our own, echo chambers sometimes. If we don't get out and meet people that are outside our organizations, outside of our industries, outside of our comfort zones, then we really limit, the potential knowledge that we can gain and wisdom of others.
Yes. Yeah. And I found that the more I put myself outside my comfort zone, the better I do. But I still do a lot of research before I go into these events, find out who's speaking and hear what they're speaking about. And I try to read up a little bit about those topics that I'm really interested in. There's so many good speakers, you can't always attend every single event because they're on top of each other. The concurrent speakers are.
All right. I find that oftentimes these conferences are an opportunity for lack of a better term, group therapy. we have a problem at our, in our professional lives or at our business or with an employee or a boss or whatever it is. And we go to one of these conferences and it's like other people have the same challenges. So it's not us.
I go to these conferences, I talk about, finding my people.
Yeah. Yeah. Your peeps. You get your peeps. Yeah. Yeah. So what's next?
Well, As you know, I'm speaking at a couple conferences, in knowledge management as well as Lean Six Sigma. I'm hoping to speak at future operational excellence conferences, just because I like the community that attend, and possibly I'll see you again. I never know when I'm going to see you. It was a total surprise this past time, but it was. A conference that I have a chance to talk about knowledge management is always a conference I want to do. So I have applied for more conferences to speak at. I'm hoping to be able to talk about, the topic of gamification. I really started to explore that. There was a good study that came out last month. I can't remember what journal it came out in, but it's about gaming and talks about markets and how people use those innovative properties to get more customers and get them to come back. Kind of like the coffee shops that have, you get the stars. I'm not going to say what company it is, but, I get a lot of stars from them, that you can use to turn into products and stuff. But same thing, so I'm writing an article about that for, how you can use that to encourage your team to build knowledge within the team to share and transfer knowledge.
So when you say gamification, what do you mean by that?
Well,
you mean actually creating simulation games or engaging in simulation games?
Well, I use the Marshmallow Challenge as one of my project management courses when I was teaching. I taught 3 years at a university, and for the most part, I taught project management. When I taught it, I found Marshmallow Challenge was a great. I found it via TED Talk, actually. It was a TED Talk about the Marshmallow Challenge, and I was able to find a version of it on the PMI website. And so I incorporated that into my classes in the first day, just because I could see my students were getting a little bit tired and I wanted to get them interested in it. And it really taught them how to share the information about, building the tower. Because the Marshmallow Challenge, if for listeners who don't know, you get either stacks of spaghetti or you get coffee sticks, and you have a marshmallow you got to put on top of these sticks or spaghetti.
Right.
So you got to work together. And you have so much time, you have so much resources, and the less resources you use, but the higher your tower is, the more points you get. And so this teaches the students how to integrate their communication skills with their risk assessment skills, with understanding the scope and the time and the cost and the resources. And it made it for a better class because the students could talk to each other about what they were doing. And, it carried on throughout the course. And I think that knowledge that they learned just from playing that one game was really good. There's a lot more games out there, but, I don't know if you've seen The Masked Singer. It's a TV show.
No.
It's a TV show. You got these four celebrities on the panel, and they listen to these singers that are behind these masks. And they try to look at the clue packages and they talk and they try to figure out who it is. And you don't always figure it out. But also they don't reveal the person until they have the least amount of votes. But what's important about this is that this team is doing knowledge management. They're taking all this tacit knowledge that each of them have about the industry and about the voices and just things that they know because they may have worked with the person, but they don't know who the people are. And
right.
They put it together. And I think that teams can learn a lot from this as well. So I've proposed to talk about that. So I won't find out for a couple months if I got selected to talk about it at a knowledge management conference, but we'll see.
That's very cool. Even beyond the conferences, you striking out on your own or thinking about that?
I am. I got my business license about 3 weeks ago to open up
a business license.
Yes. I got a business license, to open up my own, consulting, because I've been offered to team up with some other people to do some work building.
Come back to me about that business license. What the heck is a business license for consulting? What does that mean?
Means that I can that I can do business in the city of Chesapeake and in the States. I have my business license to get that to do the work, but also I can use that to get my federal tax number from that. Because the state of Virginia has to know I'm doing business as well. That also allows me to take off on my taxes that I'm doing from my home, a certain amount of square feet. And now I'm putting in the paperwork. It's in the approval process right now to do work for the government if I want to do a defense contract at any point.
I
am a veteran.
But the business license, that's just like filing an LLC, right?
Creating that's exactly what I did. Yes.
Oh,
exactly.
Okay. Because when you said business license, I'm thinking there's, in order to cut hair, you have to have a, beautician's license or something like that. And I was thinking, I've had a consulting business since 1985. I never got a license for it.
No, that's just what they charge us money for.
Okay. So, but every one of them is an LLC. So I have filed the LLC papers and stuff like that to establish an entity. Okay. So
yeah, I established my entity with the state, and then I had to go to Chesapeake and file for a business license.
Okay. I still understand the business license thing because once you have a DBA or a LLC, that's your license, right? That you're open for business. Do you have to have a special license for Chesapeake?
Yeah, I had to go pay $50 to get it.
It's just a shakedown, just a government
it
shakedown.
Is.
Okay, I don't want to show my inner libertarian here because it's all right. I could already feel the hair on the back of my head getting up, but we don't want to go there. So, consulting. What are you going to consult on?
Knowledge management. I want to help companies use knowledge management to make their companies work better together and support their customers better. Just whatever they need, I want to work with them and just help them see how it can be different or better or achieve the goals they want to achieve by
all
sharing
right.
and transferring
right.
knowledge.
Well, wishing you all the best on that. And by the way, speaking of knowledge management, not having to invent anything twice, I have made every mistake in business you're about ready to make. So if you ever need to say, hey, Joe, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? Or I need to do this or whatever it is. Just let me know. And happy to
oh, I definitely will. Virtual
coffee with you. Okay.
Believe me.
Please do. Please do. So,
thank you.
Super. Yeah. So I guess we're getting towards the end here of our session. I've enjoyed it a great deal so far, but we got a couple of speed round questions. If you're ready for it.
I am.
All right. So, first off, what's your favorite saying and why?
My favorite saying is, if you're early on time, if you're on time, you're late. I use it all the
time. That's a German thing. That's like in Germany.
Well, that was, it's ironic. I learned it from one of my executive officers, and his last name was Schlegel. So I'm assuming he was German at some point. But yeah, because as an ensign, when you come in late for a meeting, you usually get the crappy duty.
Yeah. That's I agree with that 100%. There's nothing that that bothers me more than me being late. I mean, that just sets me on tilt. But if others are late, it's just like, they better have a darn good excuse. And traffic is not an excuse.
Right.
By the way.
I used to embarrass my daughter by being at her events too early. And she got really upset with me, but she's 27 now. So she appreciates it now. And she's always early for things.
Yeah. And so what do you do? Speaking of, going outside of work and traveling, what do you do outside of work? What else do you do?
Well, other than, as my husband calls it, nerding out, I'm always doing research or writing when I'm at home. Is I do go time to time. I go with team and training and do, just some practice runs. I haven't been for a couple months. I've been pretty lazy. I call it lazy, but not going there. But I participate. A lot of times I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn talking to people. But I go out and mostly it's just stay around town. I have a sister that lives here, and so we go out shopping. And her kids are older, so it's nice to have sister time. My husband likes to golf, and I know you like to golf, but my husband golfs every weekend. In fact, he's in Texas right now golfing.
No, I'm envious. Good. who's one leader you look up to and why?
I don't really have one leader I look at. I try to take from leaders I do like and replicate that kind of behavior or, learn from them. And then the leaders I don't like, I try not to do what they do. Because I've had a lot of those.
So when you're in the Navy, because I'm still a little fixated on you're going into the Navy right out of high school, and then all of a sudden there's a light switch that went on, and you said, I'm going to go to school. So, did you have any mentor or really somebody that looked after you
No.
You'd like to? No?
No. No, we have these things called career counselors. And so you go to your career counselor, and part of getting my initial degree, when I got my associate's degree, was that the more degrees you have, the more points you have on the advancement exams, because we have to take exams every 6 months when we're enlisted.
Okay.
And so if you have an associate's degree, I believe it's 1 point. Bachelor's is like 2 points. So, you really try to get as many points as you can, because it's hard. It's competitive. So if you don't do as well on the test, maybe those other points will take you over the top to meet whatever the cut score is for that exam cycle.
So you didn't need any external motivation because you said, I need points, and this is how I get points, and this is what I need to do. Very cool. Very cool. What's the best piece of advice you ever received?
When I was younger, it was always to have $5 on me. So if I went out and we're back when $5 could do something. but now my husband always says, don't forget to take a charger, cause take my cell phone. So I have so many extra chargers in the house.
So don't forget to take your charger. That's the best piece of advice you've ever received. That's awesome. That's awesome. And what's a personal habit, other than actually taking the charger with you, what's the personal habit that's contributed to your success?
I guess learn from my mistakes. I didn't get to to where I am right now by just ignoring everything I've done and, you know, tried over and over. I've really tried to learn from my mistakes and do better. And really, you know, back in my Navy days, when I would go to a different position, I would take all the stuff I learned from my previous position and carry it on with me, such as how to talk to people, how to task people, because, you know, as I've gotten more senior, I've had more people report to me. So it's, you know, it's always learn by your mistakes.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. Well, listen, Cindy, it's been a real pleasure having you as a guest on my State of Readiness podcast. I've really enjoyed the conversation, very, very lively and very energetic, and I'm sure that the audience will pay less tuition in the University of Life for having listened to your journey. So, you know, thank you for your taking your time and joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me. I know we tried to do this about a year or so ago, but, you know, different circumstances, and I'm glad I could be here.
Yeah. Thank you again. So you've been listening to State of Readiness with your host, Joseph Paris, and our guest today is Dr. Cynthia Young. Thank you again, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.